Our scripture text is from the Gospel according to Matthew. And this is a continuation of Matthew's Gospel story that we had last week, where Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And then he asked them very pointedly, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God." From this time on, after Peter confessed that Jesus was the Messiah, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it. Forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." But Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If anyone wants to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels in the glory of the Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." What happened to Peter? In the story last week, he was the rock star disciple. Peter, the rock, had the right answer to the question, "Who do you say I am?" He said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Way to go, Peter. You rock, my friend. And it's a turning point in the gospel. The disciples and Jesus are at a crossroads. What next? What will it mean to confess Jesus as the Messiah, the Christ? Where are you leading us, Jesus? Where are we going? This summer, we've been on a road trip with Jesus. According to Matthew's gospel, he's shown us this road trip he's been leading his disciples on, and mine. The places they go. They go to a lot of surprising places, crossing borders. Jesus leading his disciples where they might not have chosen to go on their own. Jesus has been feeding the hungry without offering them a chance to wash up. And you were supposed to wash up ritually before you ate, but Jesus didn't wait for that. Jesus crossing boundaries. He takes his disciples into Gentile territory where he blesses people and heals people that the good religious folk had given up on a long time ago. Where are you taking us, Jesus? Where is this thing leading us? Where are we headed? The disciples seem to be at a crossroads. And not only that, at this juncture, Jesus talks about a literal cross. It's not talking about the symbol the Christians have or what we might wear around our neck. He's talking about the instrument of execution, capital punishment, that the Romans used to inflict terror on those that they occupied. What's the follower of Jesus to do? What do we make of that? That's what the disciples asked a long, long time ago. And that's also the question before us today. At this very moment, the Christian church, I believe, followers of Jesus, we seem to be at a crossroads. Where's Jesus leading you and me right now? This past week, I've sensed Jesus leading us to places like Houston and other towns and cities in Texas, like Beaumont and Crosby in Louisiana, further out. We've watched with disbelief the enormous suffering in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. death and injury and unbelievable loss of property, it boggles the imagination. Jesus has led us to that place, but also led us to see signs of heroism, of neighbors helping neighbors and strangers reaching out to strangers. We've seen hands and arms linked together to get people out of harm's way, people joining hands for good. These hands are black and white and brown and of every color. It doesn't seem to matter. And I don't know if anybody's checking anybody's documentation. I've seen on the news these stories and also on Facebook posts from ELCA pastors I know in the Houston area. Stories of human beings reaching out to help other human beings. No questions asked. Our church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, is present there through our congregations and also through Lutheran Disaster Response. And that's a proud ministry of our church that shows up in tough times like this and then it sticks around, not just for a few months or a few years, but sticks around for the long, long term to walk with people that suffer. And if you would like to make a gift to that, there's a note in your bulletin how to do that. You know that your money will be used wisely. Along the journey, of course, Jesus has been teaching his disciples a lot of things. He's a rabbi. Of course, we'd expect some teaching. But I think it's the actions of Jesus that really showed the disciples the heart of God's wildly inclusive love. In leading his disciples to cross borders, to reach out and touch the untouchable. And it was the actions of Jesus that got him in trouble. What was the charge that kept on hurling on him, the religious people? He eats with sinners. He breaks bread with riffraff. He has women as his disciples. He spends time with children and lifts them up, and children with property. And he heals on the Sabbath. He breaks our law. It's what Jesus does that shows the way of God's shalom. Where is Jesus leading us today? I sense that Jesus is leading us to the Korean Peninsula, where people both in North and South Korea are in the shadow of an unimaginable conflict. I sense Jesus causing us to continue to pray for peace and work for the things that make for peace, because we're called as followers of Jesus to be peacemakers. Jesus leads us to places like Charlottesville, Virginia, where we witness white supremacist Nazis spewing hate. Jesus leading us to Charlottesville, where we also saw people of many faiths, faith leaders, joining hands for good and putting themselves in harm's way to stand up against the lie of white supremacy. As followers of Jesus, we're at a crossroads. Which way will we go? What will we say? Words are important, certainly important. But more than that, what will we do? How will we respond to hate? Because we are our sister's keeper. We are our brother's keeper. So where is Jesus leading us, you and me, in times such as these? When you stand at a crossroads, I guess one way to go would be always to take the easy way out. Peter did that. No, God forbid it. The Messiah isn't supposed to die. Don't you know that? Don't you know anything, Jesus? This Messiah is all about making Israel great again, about power and glory. This Messiah is the strong leader that we signed up with that is going to get rid of the Romans, right? So that we can have an earthly kingdom here on earth. And Jesus shakes his head and stops, turns around and says, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not putting your thoughts, thinking the way that God thinks. Those are human thoughts. And you are a stumbling block to me." Be mindful of God's ways, which are just opposite of ours. In a few short verses, Matthew tells us that Peter goes from this rock of faith to nothing more than a political cheerleader. A weak, self-centered human being. Do you know anybody like that? I'm afraid I look at him in the mirror every morning when I'm shaving. At a time such as this, the world is watching us carefully. What will followers of Jesus do? What will we do for God's sake? These days, I've been thinking a lot about a story that my grandma Joyston used to tell. It happened around the year 1901, when my grandma was only about 10 years old. There had been a death in the neighbor's family who lived on the farm next to the house where my grandma grew up. The body was prepared and the wake was held in the home, as was the custom that day. Then afterwards, the friends and families took the body and the casket to a place of burial, which was the cemetery, which was around Holden Lutheran Church in Kenyon, Minnesota. A country church, beautiful big country church with this amazing cemetery around it. Most of my ancestors on that side are all there. And I'm not sure if it was a son or a father who had died, but I do remember that the person that died had committed suicide. And it was a tragic event. And now the family simply wanted to take their loved one to their home congregation for burial. Grandma had gone there with her parents before the family arrived with the body. And as she stood there, she watched as the horse brought up the wagon with the casket in it, and the family of the deceased were either walking or riding horses with them. As they got to the churchyard, the pastor came out of the church, and he went outside the gate of the cemetery, and he stood there in the gate of the cemetery. And instead of opening up the gates, he led the family around to the back of the church, the back of the cemetery, out into the middle of a cornfield. You see, this man could not be buried on holy ground of the cemetery because he had committed suicide. Those are the rules, not just of that church, but of the church in general. Instead of opening the gates and providing pastoral care to this family, the pastor decided to do the easy thing, to follow the rules of the church so he wouldn't get in trouble. And the family, of course, didn't get the pastoral care that they needed. And whenever Grandma would tell that story, she'd always end it with this line. Wasn't that terrible? Wasn't that terrible? Even a little girl, 10 years of age, knew that that was terrible. And when she told that story to Grandma, even after 80 years after it happened, she told it as if it had happened yesterday. Wasn't that terrible? And what made it so terrible for her was that was her beloved church. That was her congregation. That was her pastor who did that. He chose to be a gatekeeper. He chose not to do the hard thing. In the Gospel of John, Jesus says, I am the gate. I am the door. I am the way and the truth and the life. And indeed, doesn't Jesus show us the way? This Jesus who crossed borders and broke down barriers, this one who came proclaiming God's agenda, shalom, the one who lived God's dream of love and showed us how to love one another. Sometimes you and I, we followers of Jesus, we wonder if what we do makes a difference at all. Day by day, we make so many decisions, big ones and little ones, mostly small ones. Of how we act and what we say and do in front of our children, in front of our grandchildren or nieces and nephews, about how we treat people at the workplace, about how we befriend a kid at school who doesn't have anyone to eat lunch with, or we attempt not to befriend that one because it's not cool. so many decisions, big ones or small ones, how he might share a blessing bag with someone who's hungry. How we care for our neighbors in need, the stranger in our midst, how we treat one another. Who's watching? Who will notice? Well, in 1901, a little girl in Minnesota was watching the pastor of her church. And to her dying day, she never forgot what she saw. Who is watching us these days? When refugees seek a safe place to live, who is watching us these days as people are marginalized because of the color of their skin or their sexual orientation? Who is watching us, God's people, the church? What will they remember about these days? What will they tell their children about who we welcome or who we refuse to welcome? What will they remember about how we care for God's good creation? What will we remember about those that we share our bread with and those we don't? What will they remember about how each and every one of us is called to live as a peacemaker? Who's watching? Moving on many years after that initial story, I'll tell you the end of that cemetery story. It happened that families at Holy Lutheran Church kept on dying, you know. That happens over years and years. And you need to dig more graves, you run out of space, you need to enlarge your cemetery. So the cemeteries expanded. It was actually the boundaries were widened and the fence was moved into that cornfield. So now finally Grandma's neighbor was buried in that cemetery's holy ground. But is that really true? Martin Luther said this about holy water. We don't need special holy water for baptism because all of water is holy. All of creation is good. God is holy, and what God creates is good. And that neighbor of Grandma's was never outside of God's holy ground, never outside of God's wildly inclusive grace. God didn't wait for us to declare it holy. God's already way out in front of us for Jesus' sake. God tells us, Jesus, to show us what to do, to show us how to join our hands for the good of our community and how to live the dream of God's love. I spoke with someone recently who told me, you know, the more I study scriptures, the more I discover about Jesus, the more I struggle about the way that I live my life. How I spend my money, the way I invest my time, the way I treat my coworkers. And I feel like that too. Like Peter, I want to follow Jesus, but sometimes it's so hard. Just so hard. No way, Lord. Peter says, God forbid. The world is watching what the followers of Jesus do. The world is taking note of where we're headed these days. Where will we walk? Will we follow Jesus? Will we go to those people that others have just given up on? What will we do? Truth be told, we stand at a crossroads. Yet today, the good news of God's grace is this. This word of grace is proclaimed through our other reading for today that I'll now share with you from Romans. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdoing one another in showing honor. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Extend hospitality to strangers. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Live peacefully with one another. Beloved, never avenge yourself. No. If your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's God's way. Oh, it's not easy. Wildly inclusive grace isn't simple. It's not the easy way out. It wasn't the easy way out for God, or for Jesus, or Peter, or any of the other disciples. Yet finally, for Jesus' sake, it's the only way. The only way for the likes of you and me, my friends, dare to live the dream of God. Because that's precisely what followers of Jesus can do. Our hymn, Dare to Live the Dream of God, is written by a wonderful new hymn writer, text by David Berlin. Dare to live the dream God gives you, seek out paths as yet unknown, for the Spirit leads you onward and you never walk alone. Go in courage, walking humbly, bearing love none can destroy, doing justice, loving mercy, go with God and go in joy. In the fourth stanza, there's a typo, so I'll read it with the correct end of that first line if you look at your bulletin. Dare to live the dream God gives us, brave the path and face the fear, for the Spirit will unite us, Christ Himself is always near. Go in courage, walking humbly, bearing love none can destroy, doing justice, loving mercy, go with God, and go in joy.